we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. Before we start the show, we have an important announcement to make. Now that the general election has been called, any suggestion of imbalance or unfair criticism by the panel of one or more political parties will be ruthlessly cut from the finished version of the programme. So, now let's look at the final scores. Everybody 16 points. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Wheen and Tony Hawkes. Facing them on my left are Alan Corran and Linda Smith. And our newsreader this week is Peter Donaldson. Francis, your first unbiased question. Why is the nation desperately looking forward to June the 8th?
Well, I've been away this week. But actually, news of this, I think, even got through to Bogota. It's Tony Blair, is it?
Hmm.
He's beyond satire, that man. He's impervious to it. You know, for the last four or more years, Private Eye has been portraying him as this sort of sanctimonious, happy-clappy, guitar-playing vicar. And to announce the election, he comes back from Chequers wearing his jeans and ostentatiously carrying his guitar. And then goes off to a girls' school, clutching a hymn book and singing, "Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam," or that sort of thing. "Oh, come, let us adore him," it looked more like actually. And his people, his experts in Downing Street, had clearly thought this out and thought, this is the way of challenging people's negative stereotypes of Blair, this awful preachy character. Let's get him in front of a class of schoolgirls, screaming at him while he prays at them.
It's sort of tough on Haig that he's the one who's going to be crucified, isn't it?
It's awful sad. But we have to, now that the election's on, we have to mention that there are apparently some other candidates and parties standing in this election.
There's that, the fiddle player, what's his name, Kennedy. He's...
Yes.
Remember where you were when Kennedy got elected?
Well, he was probably here.
He used to be on the News Quiz in the old days, and then his career took a nosedive and he became leader of the Liberal Democrats instead.
I could give my answers in Welsh tonight, if you like, to make it fair on Plaid Cymru.
Thank you.
Actually, Blair's talking about, well, in his speech, his ludicrous speech he did make in this girls' school, he did say that he wanted to win our hearts and minds. And I've decided that I'm not prepared to free those up for him. So he can have my tonsils. If he can find them, because I had them out 25 years ago. I noticed on Channel 4, on the first day of the election, they said that people, a low turnout was going to be a problem. And they had this chart up, which was an apathy index. And I thought, any apathy index worth its salt would have no results.
All the reports I saw said that Blair had fired the starting gun for the election campaign, which seemed a very odd analogy to me, because I can't think of any other race in which the man who fires the starting pistol is also allowed to compete in the race. So it does give him a slightly unfair advantage, because he's about two laps around the track before he bothers to pull the trigger, and then he's allowed to point it at the other people of the race to guarantee that he wins, which is indeed the case, as far as one can tell from the opinion polls.
The Prime Minister made his official announcement at a school in Bermondsey. Now, in the further interest of balanced coverage of the election, a joke about the remaining parties. A Scottish nationalist, an Ulster unionist, a Welsh nationalist, a UK independent, a Green and an Irish social democrat go into this pub. Tony, whose life in the sun has been eclipsed by the sun?
Let this be a lesson to any criminals that are listening to this programme now, because I assume this would be their favourite station. But if they are, then let it be a warning to them that if they do commit a crime and then escape from prison, that the Metropolitan Police will make damn sure that they catch up with you within at least 50 years and bring you back to justice, provided you have the decency to give yourselves up as well. Because it is Ronnie Biggs flew into RAF Northolt. Of course, the sun bankrolled the whole thing to the tune of about £500,000 to bring him back, because clearly he's just not very well and he wants some treatment here. So the good old patriotic son says, let's make him a burden on the state. So they've brought him back, and of course he'd given himself up, and he sort of had two strokes and he's dribbling and he's a right old state, but they get 110 police there. just in case he tries to make another get. Fantastic use of police time. And dogs. And police vans and helicopters overhead. And he just sort of slumps into someone's arms and goes away.
Of course, it may be that he put his name down for a bed in hospital 38 years ago.
But Robin Cook, do you see Cookie got him? Because they're all called Bigsy and Cookie now in the Sun. The Sun loves all these people. And Cookie got him a passport in about 2 hours flat as part of the ethical foreign policy. So, you know, we carry on selling arms to all these ghastly regimes, but we can give passports to criminals if it will help suck up to Rupert Murdoch when there's an election around the corner. And there was the PCC, I think, the Press Complaints Commission, is looking into it, apparently. And since the chairman of the Code of Conduct Committee, or whatever it's called, on the PCC, is the head of News International, publishers of The Sun, this is going to be a very wide-ranging and scrupulously impartial inquiry. But, I mean, a lot of people have wondered if it's quite ethical to do deals with this terrible old crook. But Biggs said he was quite happy to deal with Murdoch, so it was all right.
Ronald Biggs was arrested for robbing a mail train in 1963 and later escaped. He spent 15 months in Wandsworth prison for his part in the heist of the century. Whereas for his part in Sale of the Century, Nicholas Parsons is still at large. 2 points to Tony. Linda, whose Damascene conversion led to a Mediterranean tour?
Ah, this is the Pope. The Pope's been off on one of his little adventure holidays. I mean, all credit to him. I mean, most people at his age, they just go and visit some friends who live in Alicante, don't they? But he's been to Greece, and he's been to Syria, and then he's off to Malta. Quite impressive. He's saying sorry, isn't he, to various religions. He said sorry to the Greek Orthodox religion for crimes the Roman Catholic Church had done against them. He said sorry to Islam. Do you think it'd be better just doing a round-robin letter? Or perhaps putting an announcement in the local, you know, the Syrian Bugle or something?
Paint sorry on the side of his Popemobile.
While he's handing out the ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
I've actually seen the Pope when I went to Rome. And he's really tiny. He looks like a glove puppet operated by a really dodgy puppeteer.
Linda. He was probably quite a long way away from you.
No, he wasn't. He was on a Lambretta. He was going past. He nicked my handbag. No, he was doing his shtick outside the Vatican, you know, when he does all his turn out there, doesn't he? Going, hey, anyone in from Switzerland? Lovely country, Catholic country. Hey, anyone in from Italy? Hey, we're in Italy. Boom, boom. You know, he just does this.
I've seen him do that on the balcony as well, and I got sort of preoccupied. I kept expecting a crocodile and a string of sausages to turn up. If the Pope will forgive me.
Alan, listen to this. Meals on Wheels by Vic Reeves. Why can patient diners look forward to a recipe for change?
Yes, well, you can't have operations anymore. You can have seared squid testicles and polenta and stuff like that, because Lloyd Grossman's got his hands on the health service. There'll be a waiting list for the food, nobody has operation. Probably a very good solution. Wake up and Lloyd Grossman is peering over you, sort of through the keyhole surgery. Boom, boom! Now, what kind of man needs an operation like this? And he and a group of those rat-faced chefs that appear on television, those frightful charlatans, have got together to kill such people in the health service, having been killed off by the few doctors we haven't got, the nurses who've gone home. And they're going to stuff them with wonderful exotic foods, which are going to kill them all off very quickly. And it's all going to cost tuppence.
It's a great shame, because we'll have lost that threat that used to exist in the English languages, like, do you like hospital food? Just now, if you say that to someone, you just have to take them out to an expensive restaurant.
I think now they've sorted out the food, they should get to work on those hospital gowns. If you've ever had to wear them, they're awful. I'm sure Vivian Westwood is designing them at the moment. They look a state from the front and show your arse at the back.
Say that again. I love it when you talk dirty.
Vivian Westwood.
Because they got Prue Leithin, I think, to sort of sort out the food on the on the railways, didn't they? And the food got better and the railways just completely fell apart. It's not a very good omen for the NHS.
Mr. Grossman admitted he got off to a tricky start in his new job, especially when he spoke about the poor choice of meat and two veg on offer to female patients awaiting gender reassignment. Patients have largely enjoyed their new, much more varied menu, though those on the prostate ward complained that serving cocker leaky soup was rubbing it in. 2 points to Alan. We start round two with a cutting from the St. Albans Observer.
I would like to point out that Emma Kirkby, who is performing at St. Saviour's Church on Sunday, July the 15th, is in fact a celebrated singer, and not, as our previous report stated, a celebrated swinger.
Thanks to Peter Crumpler of St. Albans for that. Francis, which pair of Kents are rapidly running out of grace and favour?
Well, I have to watch what I say here, because I'm about to go on a trip with Prince Michael of Kent. My new mate, Mikey, and I think his wife, also called Mikey by some mysterious reason, is not coming, as far as I know. So I better not be too
Well, you won't be sharing a room with him, will you?
The whole thing is all a bit of a mystery at the moment.
Did you just meet them on holiday and arrange to go away together? And
well, yes,
somehow actually. Somehow you couldn't wriggle out of it. Oh, no, it's the Kents, we'll have to go.
Well, the whole thing is slightly surreal, actually, because we're going to inspect the Russian nuclear fleet at Murmansk as well. I don't really understand.
The money's run out, we'll kick you to death.
Anyway, but my new friend, Prince Michael of Kent, has come in for a lot of uninformed and unfair criticism, mostly from the Queen, so far as I can see, or her Lord Chamberlain, who have noticed that he and his wife live in this 7-bedroom flat in Kensington Palace, for which I think they pay 300 quid a month, something like that. And for some reason, this man, Lord Luce, hopeless old Tory MP, who is now the Lord Chamberlain, has said that they should be kicked out and join the housing waiting list for a council flat like anyone else. But I think the Queen's going to see them right. Apparently she's going to after them again.
If she doesn't, you probably will, won't you? Because you're...
They could live in a caravan in your garden.
I still don't know why you're going.
No. Because it's there.
Oh, all right.
Well, it's just as well you're not sharing a room with him, then, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if I'm sharing a room with him or not, actually. I guess I may well be.
Michael, how do you know which one you're sharing a room with? He could be in for a nasty fright at the Moscow Hilton.
It's the beard that gives it away, I think.
Say nothing.
Alan, why does secrecy no longer get the church's vote?
I don't know. What kind of question is that, Simon?
Secrecy.
Get the churches. Is it? This is
the front page of the Telegraph.
Bootmakers.
Oh, I do know.
What
I
is
do
it?
Know. It's about archbishops.
Yes.
It used to be a secret ballot, mm-hmm. And now it's a card vote.
They're now people's archbishops. We can vote for them, can't we? Yes.
It's also going to do away with the old tradition, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Simon, of nolo episcopari.
Of what?
Thought that would.
You're Episcopari again, aren't you?
Yeah. No, there's this ancient tradition called Nolo Episcopari, as we call it.
Nolo Episcopari.
Which means that if you want to be a bishop, you're not meant to push yourself forward for it. And anyone who does put themselves forward is clearly ineligible to be a bishop because they're too ambitious. So you have to just wait until someone notices that you want to be one. And then Blair says to you, would you like to be the Bishop of Liverpool? And you say, oh, well, now you mention it. But they get to do away with all that.
But
it's a bit hard to try and be holier than thou in Blair's presence, isn't it?
Could you make an anti-William Hague joke so we can...
Blimey, William Hague's rubbish, isn't he?
You don't need any more elections, do we? I mean, if we've got another election going, the last thing we want is bishops trying to win our favour, isn't it? They're going to be up there trying to make the Ten Commandments more gentle.
Yes, it would be things like, you voted for him, but where are the Beetle drives?
They'll say things like, thou shalt not steal glances, you know, and thou shalt not kill time, and thou shalt not commit adultery that much. Anything to get our votes.
Worshippers will be allowed to nominate their favourite clergy. In a recent Channel 4 survey, Father Dougal came fifth. In the interest of ecclesiastical balance here, we must now mention the Reverend Ian Paisley, the Vicar of Dibley, and Rabbi Lionel Blue. Tony, listen to this.
Walk tall, walk straight, and look the world right in the eye. That's what my mama told me when I was about knee high. She said, son, be a proud man and hold your head up high. Walk tall, walk straight, and look the world right in the eye. Walk tall.
Why are small men walking tall?
Well, fantastic bit of research been done. And it basically says that small men are a better bet for marriage because they're less likely to be unfaithful than tall men. And this is nonsense. You know, I'm 6'3", and not once have I been unfaithful to my wife. Admittedly, not being married has made that a lot easier. But the thinking behind it is that traditionally and over the years is that taller men are considered to be more alluring, I think was the word they used. And, you know, at my height, who's going to argue with that? You know, I couldn't agree more. I'm lovely, especially on the radio. So this is it. And the theory is it goes back to the hunter-gatherer society when tall men were alleged, you know, were better hunters. They could go out and get things. And
they'd
now,
be worse gatherers, though, wouldn't they?
They what?
They'd be worse gatherers.
Well,
because things would tend to be low down and they'd all be back.
Yes, but how unattractive is watching someone gather? I mean, that is, you know. But they do say it's not relevant to society now, but I think it is. Say if, you know, I'm out in the supermarket trying to hunt for my family or whatever, you know, and if there's some beans for my family on the top shelf, who's going to get it first, me or Dudley Moore, you know? So that is a very full and good answer.
It's not really about tall blokes at all. It's true, tall blokes can spot the better-looking women from a further distance. Would likely be after them.
Well, it depends on the angle.
Blokes like Bernie Eccleston and Paul Daniels and Dudley Moore, who've got money, do quite as well. It's really only about money. It's whether it's tall blokes with money or little blokes with money. Isn't it?
Well, it doesn't say whether you can get the women or not. It's whether that you're likely.
This research may be bogus.
It's about infidelity. You see, according to this theory, the small man is less likely to go and cheat. That's the theory.
Yeah, that's because the smaller man, he's probably just at about bosom height with women, so he's happy enough for about 50 years. The taller man can actually, you know, as Alan says, can see around, can have a look around and think, oh, there's some more over there.
So is that why Dudley Moore remarried four times because he wasn't quite tall enough, is that it?
Yes, exactly.
He was sort of in no man's land.
He was a bit...
Alan, which couple went to the ends of the earth to prove their love?
I think they're called something like Thorn Swill, but I it's difficult. No, I mean, they really are, but it's a Mr. and Mrs. They walk to the South Pole and the North Pole.
Well, they didn't want to be the sort of boring couple that always goes to the same place.
Same place
holiday.
Every year. Their holiday snaps are going to look fairly similar from both. What struck me about it, now having been married a fair amount of time myself, and how they managed to stay together walking across this, it's because it's a land without maps, so there's no argument about the map. Otherwise, they'd have killed one another before they got to the pole, if they're us. I mean, we're hardly on the A40 before somebody loses teeth out the car window. But yes, I think they're called Thornswill. And they walk to the South Pole and they walk to the North Pole. And they're still happily married.
But I wonder if they really did mean to, because I've been on walks with men like that. He's probably just said, no, this is a shortcut to Tinterland. Well, if you're cold, you shouldn't have left your cardi in the car.
Why won't you ask that penguin?
Penguins, actually, that's another thing. They would have found penguins. Oh, my practice is coming up.
But
No.
They're dying of the heat.
I know.
Because it's getting too hot. And so there they are. Because they are like pensioners. They won't take their coats off, will they? No matter how hot it gets. No. I feel comfortable if I'm smart.
Mike and Fiona Thornwell, who this week became the first couple to trek to both the North Pole and the South Pole, though so far, thank goodness for them, they've managed to avoid the Maury Pole, the Gallup Pole and the Harris Pole. So I'll give 2 points to Alan, and I'll give 1 point to Linda, because she answered another question, because otherwise we'd be looking at a really boring draw. Before we start the final round, here's a personal ad from the Essex County Standard.
Female, 26. Human rights activist, into gender politics, ecological issues, political philosophy and world salvation, seeks male for light-hearted fun.
Thanks to Geraldine Evans of Colchester for that. Francis, your piece of music. Francis, is there life on Mars?
Well, there's no danger of this being a draw. Since I haven't a clue, this is obviously a question they've found suggestions, as they do every year, that there might be some kind of potential life on Mars because they're, you know, they have fossilised Martian dung.
They found a human head 100 yards across. At least it's been found by Professor Van Zander of the Sunday Sport University. It's just this enormous head, and he's refined it with computers and stuff like that, and it's his enormous smiling head. And it's on Mars, and he says this is proof that there were once people on
That's
Mars.
That's not new, that's been there for centuries.
No, they found a new one.
It's a new head.
A smiling head.
A smiling head.
But just one. What's he got to be happy about? He's got no friends, has he? That must be dreadfully lonely, having a head that big and then just being on your own on Mars.
Normally the silly season doesn't start until sort of mid-July or thereabouts, and suddenly all the stories this week seem to be about bogus surveys and ridiculous bits of academic research, the sort of things you get in August, as if they've got nothing, you know, serious stories like the wedding of Chris Evans and that sort of thing, which swept off the front pages.
Why are you so bitter about these surveys? How tall are you?
Dr. Tom Van Flandern, investigator of celestial anomalies at the Washington-based Meta Research, believes that a photograph taken of the Syrtis Major region of Mars shows a giant head carved into the rock by an ancient Martian civilization. Linda, why does drinking both milk and alcohol make you feel good?
Oh, well, alcohol, that makes you feel good because it's very, very good. Best thing in the world for you is to get completely legless, apparently. You owe it to yourself. It's the healthiest possible thing you can do. Especially beneficial to gentlemen over the age of 55. And so beneficial is alcohol that scientists have now created this little pill with extracts from red wine. So you can just take a pill now. At last, an end to a glass of wine misery. So that's one thing. And the milk is good for you. Well, it's because it's good for you, isn't it? It's milk.
You're working for the Milk Marketing Board. That's an extraordinary detailed knowledge you have of it. Milk
yes,
is good for you because it's well good for you.
Yes.
It's good for your heart or something.
I believe that's their slogan. Mm.
Right. Good for your heart and
calcium, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's why.
It's only this week. Last week it was full of polyunsaturated fats. He had a bar of Cadbury's and dropped dead in the street. Like, suddenly this week it's all right. I didn't even get pissed as well. It's a wonderful world. And it's very hard to manage your diet if you're over 55. Not that I'd know about that. But do you know what they allow? It says 8 units a week. Do you know what 8 units is, Simon?
I don't want to know.
You can't put it in your eye. You couldn't go to an you couldn't go to an optometrist conference and say, gentlemen, the Queen.
Depends how you work it out. I go by kitchen units and you can get...
The findings of two new studies suggest both milk and alcohol are beneficial to health, which is why this week's sales of eggnog have gone through the roof. The research is great news for Britain's dairy farms, or would be if the cattle weren't all dead. Alan, what's so beastly about Cricklewood?
Oh, right. What a sad story. I lived in Cricklewood for 28 years and left it 6 months ago. I was a civilising influence. I went there and had to leave, and it's gone feral. I mean, it was pretty bad when I got there. I myself was suckled by wolves, as you can see. It's a very quiet suburb. And then a woman, very nice woman, in the next street from me, actually, in Hocroft Road, Mrs. Newman, very nice, not bandy at all. And she came home one day, and there was a lynx sitting on the wall. And they had to get London Zoo to come and collect it, because you didn't expect to find it in Cricklewood. Knowing the area as I do, I rather suspect it belonged to a furrier who was breeding politically incorrect coats on the sly, and the lynx was going to end up as a pair of muffs. or Prince and Princess Michael of Kent, as we know. But that's what it was. They had this wild cat in MW2, and it's now in the London Zoo. It's got a bit of a limp.
That's absolutely right.
I wouldn't mind borrowing that, actually, that lynx, put in my back garden.
Oh, dear, that
would... And also it would frighten off next door's moggies.
Were you,
They walked in and saw that, because they tend to use my pond as their own sushi bar.
So are you, you're the person that they look to? Because I noticed in one of the papers there was a quote from you about this. They'd obviously... Yes. I think it was the Daily Mail.
That was the best they could do on the Daily Mail. Let's get someone who doesn't live there anymore and knows nothing. Let's wake him up at 3 a.m. and ask him about a cat on the wall in the house he'd never lived in. They didn't... Being the Daily Mail, they didn't print what I originally said.
According to the Daily Mail, the beast has odd-shaped ears and a powerful jaw, and it likes to stalk foxes and deer through the forests. But it still won't be able to ascend the throne until its mother dies. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Tony.
This has been sent in by Ron Martin. It's from the Times. Police in Seaton, Devon, are searching for an elderly woman in a motorised wheelchair after she reversed into the window of a closed shop. The pensioner caused more than £1,000 of damage before making a low-speed getaway at 8 miles.
Linda.
I've got a cutting from the Radio Times, sent in by a listener in Great Missenden in Bucks. 8:30, food and drink. Anthony Worrell Thompson prepares beef stew with dumplings before visiting a local brewery where Oz Clark pours the pints for his rugby-playing friends. Meanwhile, Emma Crowhurst prepares a French tart for the crew.
Owen.
Well, mine, Simon, is a diary item from the Hornchurch Advertiser. It says, pensioner, an old soldier, Mr. William Duffy, has rung the diary to bring Hornchurch's attention to an upsetting incident he experienced upon arrival last week at Marseille Airport. Officials asked if there were any foodstuffs in his luggage, and Mr. Duffy showed them his bottle of HP sauce. It was confiscated on the spot. I've been taking HP sauce to France for nearly 50 years, said an outraged Mr. Duffy. This is the first time this has ever happened. I suppose it is all about foot and mouth disease, but as I live in an upstairs flat in the middle of Hornchurch, I cannot believe my sauce could have become contaminated. I tried to explain this to the customs man, but he refused to listen.
Thank you all. Let's look now at the final scores. Francis and Tony have an estimable 15, but this week's winners are Alan and Linda with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from the election campaign guide sent to all candidates and agents.
Things to remember if you're holding public meetings. Point number one, book a hall.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Sween, Tony Hawkes, Linda Smith and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Simon Littlefield and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.